kpfk.org for more information.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
I was turning the radio dial in the car, trying to find something other than the usual dribble and fluff and nothingness on the rest of the airwaves, and I just stumbled across KPFK, and I was just drawn to it like a magnet, and I was just listening to it intently, and all of a sudden, I said, I have got to pull off the freeway here. I found the nearest telephone booth. I called my wife and said, you have got to turn on 90.7 FM. I will talk to you when I get home. This is incredible. What I noticed was different right away was that people were being interviewed at length, and when they were talking about the purpose for the station, the reason for being was to promote understanding among peoples of all races and from all countries and all classes, and to provide information about the events of the world that were not reported or not reported completely or in depth by any of the other major news outlets, broadcast or print. And I just thought that was phenomenal, and I've been blessed ever since.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Negwa Ibrahim. During an interview on CNN, Tom Homan, Donald Trump's so-called border czar, made a big admission, admitting that the residents of Chicago are making it too damn hard for ICE to enact Trump's mass deportation plan. He said, quote, Chicago, very well educated. They have been educated how to defy ICE, on how to hide from ICE. They call it know your rights. I call it how to escape from ICE, end quote. As the executive director of the Chicago Hospitality Accountability and Advocacy Database Project writes, organized resistance to immigration enforcement in the United States has deep roots from the Underground Railroad to the present. Our current movements to subvert inhumane, racist immigration laws are directly tied to the 1980s, when U.S.-backed violence and economic deprivation in Central America displaced millions of people. The Reagan administration denied asylum to the overwhelming majority of refugees. In response, churches, workers, and grassroots activists built the modern sanctuary movement, providing shelter and support to those fleeing violence. This underground network shielded thousands and reshaped public debate, challenging the U.S. government's role in fomenting the violence driving migration and the responsibility to shelter refugees that U.S. foreign policy had in part created. The executive director of the Chicago Hospitality Accountability and Advocacy Database Project goes on to state, quote, the Trump administration's renewed deportation plans are a grave threat, but they are neither unprecedented nor insurmountable. And as Todd Miller writes, for over 30 years, there has been in the United States a massive expansion of the border and immigration apparatus in this country, costing more than $400 billion since 1994, serving as a moneymaker for private border industry companies known as the Border Industrial Complex. And this border industrial complex has been receiving bipartisan ideological and financial support for decades using U.S. tax dollars, and has provided the Trump administration the infrastructure he needs to carry out his renewed deportation plans. This provides an important reminder that the Trump administration's renewed deportation plans, while a grave threat, is not unprecedented. And as such, organized resistance to immigration enforcement today can and is successfully building on lessons from the past. Once again, as the executive director for the Chicago Hospitality Accountability and Advocacy Database Project wrote so beautifully, quote, our own history as workers reminds us that the collective action can disrupt such plans and turn campaigns of hate into engines for solidarity, care, and community, end quote. So with us today to talk about these lessons from the past, and the importance of dismantling the border industrial complex that has for decades instituted with bipartisan support racist anti-immigrant practices, policies, and rhetoric, is our guest Todd Miller, who has written on border and immigration issues for the New York Times, Al Jazeera America, and writes a weekly post for the Border Chronicle. His latest book is Build Bridges, Not Walls, A Journey to a World Without Borders. And you can follow him on Twitter at Memo Miller and view more of his work at ToddMillerWriter.com. Welcome, Todd Miller, to Middle East in Focus. Todd, are you there?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh, wonderful.
I was cut off, so I wasn't hearing anything, but now I am. So
oh, wonderful.
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Wonderful. Thank you so much again for joining us and for your incredible work on really bringing awareness and light to the border industrial complex. I definitely feel it's a topic that is not actually talked about enough, so I'm very excited for us to get into an in-depth conversation about it here on Middle East in Focus. So let's dive right in. Can you first tell us, what is the border industrial complex, and why do you feel it's important to raise awareness and public knowledge about it?
Sure. Well, the border industrial complex, I would say, is or probably a part of, more like a part of, the military industrial complex. It's the relationship, I guess you could define it a few ways, but the most common way, you know, it's the relationship between the government, in this case, the Department of Homeland Security, and its border and immigration enforcement arms, which would mainly be Customs and Border Protection and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and the private industry, meaning hundreds of companies that get contracts through either ICE or CBP or other parts of DHS that have to do with immigration and border enforcement. And I think this is the industrial complex part of what is border and immigration enforcement is things that is commonly left out of the conversation when we're talking about border and immigration. I mean, people probably are remembering how it was discussed during the campaigns coming up to the election this past year, and the narratives often get reduced to these pretty partisan ways of going, thinking about the border or presenting the border and immigration. And in reality, what gets left out is this massive complex in which you have there's a profit motive involved, where there are companies that are constantly buying floor contracts to ultimately increase their bottom line. And then secondly, these companies wield power that ordinary not have. For example, they can give campaign contributions to key candidates. Candidates like could be the presidential candidates, or it could be candidates or for different congressional positions or key committee chairs, like the Appropriation Committee, which is the appropriations, of course, is what determines the budget, or the Homeland Security Committees, which propose different policy measures. So the whole part of how policies and strategies for border and immigration enforcement get laid out often are happening behind closed doors with this participation of powerful interests that have profit in mind. So that's one aspect of it. I think it's a really important part of this whole issue that needs to be talked about much more to increase our understanding of what it is and why the policy is a certain way and why it keeps being a certain way.
And I, to your point, why it is and keeps being a certain way. And I think that's one of the things that I appreciate about your work and the work of others who are really trying to draw attention to the fact that actually what we're seeing under the Trump administration, while it is absolutely horrific and has grave threats to innocent lives and communities throughout the United States, it is not unprecedented because of this very thing you're talking about the border industrial complex that's really gotten bipartisan support for the last few decades. Really And what it's demonstrating is how immigration policies, time and time again, have actually been motivated by profit and profit for these companies that, in fact, are sitting at the table helping craft immigration laws and inform immigration laws so they can increase profit. So I want to dive into this bipartisan support by talking about how the Biden administration actually, instead of opposing mass deportation, had actually proactively helped construct its very infrastructure.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I don't mean to laugh, but it's one of the things that we need to talk about a little bit more. How bipartisan especially when you're talking about the border industrial complex. Of course, as you were just saying, you know, when we consider, obviously, if you consider what Trump is and what Trump is doing, and Trump does offer a unique threat, a threat that takes it to levels that we haven't seen before. But Trump is also enabled by this bipartisan, I wouldn't call it, if you're going to look at deportation, you can look at deportations or you could look at border enforcement or border and immigration enforcement, it's the whole massive construct of it. If you look at it, it is, I would call it a border and immigration enforcement machine that has been developed over, as you just said, decades. And through multiple presidential administrations, I mean, I'm not going to go and give a long history lesson right now, but you can go back to the Operation Gatekeeper days of the Clinton administration, for example. You can go to the George W. Bush administration after Clinton and talk about 9/11 and the creation of the Department of Homeland Security. And you can go to the Obama administration and look at Obama was called the quote-unquote deporter-in-chief by immigrant rights organizations during his tenure after deporting over 3 million migrants during his tenure. And then, of course, Obama was followed by Trump, and we all know what happened during Trump, especially like families being pulled apart right in front of television cameras before everyone's eyes. And then Biden supposedly comes in 2021 and with this idea, oh, we're going to make a more humane border. Well, if you look at his executive orders at the very beginning of his presidency, you might think that was the case. It was far from the case. During Biden's term, he not only did continually develop the infrastructure, and I'll talk in a second about what that means, the infrastructure for mass incarceration of immigrants and the deportation of immigrants, but he also deported many people himself, his administration, that is. Under his administration, at least 4 million people were deported or expelled from the country. And to give you the scope of that, that was during the Trump administration, his 4 years, the first one, he deported 1.5 million people. Mm. So we're looking at more than double the number of people deported. And on top of that, if you look at the contracts, like if you do a search on the top contracts, the Customs and Border Protection and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, from the Biden administration from 2021 to 2024, the number one company is a company called Deployed Resources. Deployed Resources is an infrastructure company. It builds border infrastructure, and that would be what they call processing centers, which is another way of saying it's a processing center where if immigrants are arrested coming across the border, they will be brought to these places to be processed. And that also means detention, and there are jail cells in which people are detained, and also what they call soft-sided facilities. Soft-sided facilities is a term that you could think of tent detention camps. In other words, the top company receiving contracts from the Biden administration is literally building the infrastructure for if there are the roundups that that Trump says will be the case during his administration. If there's these mass roundups of people, these are the very places that people will be detained. So the capability for Trump to be able to do that was enhanced or enabled by the Biden administration and what they focused on during its administration, while the Biden administration itself was deporting and expelling millions of people. And so, but all in all, it's a product of not only the Biden administration. I don't even want to focus and say, oh, this is just the Biden administration. The Biden administration was following a decades-long bipartisan agreement between the Republican and Democratic parties, one that you might not believe, right, because they seem to be always arguing with each other about this, but an agreement on border and immigration enforcement that both parties are pushing forward the agenda. And that's where we find ourselves today with the Trump administration taking office with the potential capability to round up mass amounts of people and deport them.
And I really quick, before I ask my next question, I just want to remind everyone that we are talking today about the border industrial complex and how understanding it is a necessary tool in the fight against the Trump administration's renewed deportation plans with our guest, Todd Miller, who has written on border and immigration issues for The New York Times, Al Jazeera America, and writes a weekly post for The Border Chronicle. And his latest book is Build Bridges, Not Walls, A Journey to a World Without Borders. Todd, I want to get into a little bit more detail about some of these companies that have been really making a lot of money off of U.S. immigration policies and this border industrial complex. And one of the things, and you were just speaking about it as well in your article, and one of the things you state in your article is that during the 2020 election campaign, Biden received three times more contributions from top border industry companies than actually Trump, and such, it shouldn't have been a surprise that he left office as the king of border contracts. Can you just shed a little bit more light on some of these other contracts that Biden implemented and gave billions of dollars to, some of these companies that were really profiting off of this?
I'm glad you asked that question. And the whole, I forgot, you know, to emphasize too that at the end of the Biden, this 4-year term for President Joe Biden, he ends his term as there has not been a president who has contracted in money terms, higher amounts of money have been put towards private companies and making contracts than Biden. So he's the top contractor ever from any president ever in the history of the United States. And he had about 30, if you calculate or count up the number of contracts during the Biden administration, there was about $32 billion worth of contracts. And that he outspent Trump in this capacity by $12 billion. Trump was about $20 billion at the end of his term. And when he ended his term in 2020, he was the highest contractor. So we're looking at a pretty significant legacy in that sense by Biden. And as you mentioned, that Biden received three times more campaign contributions from the top border industry. I did a report for an organization, an international organization called Transnational Institute, on this. And when we were looking at different, we identified the top 10 or 15 border contractors up to that point, so up to about 2020. And some of those contractors are big companies, like military companies that people will recognize, you know, like your General Dynamics or Lockheed Martin. General Dynamics, for example, had a huge contract creating surveillance towers. If anyone has been to the border, there's these surveillance towers that are called remote video surveillance systems and they're mounted literally on the border wall, right on the international boundary of many cities. And those are manufactured and installed by General Dynamics. And Lockheed Martin, some of the fixed-wing aircraft that Customs and Border Protection has, which is part of their arsenal, they have a whole air and marine element in which they have, and of course, people on the border know this too, that you see overflights and helicopters and that sort of thing. Well, Lockheed Martin has been very involved with the fixed-wing aircraft. Another company called General Atomics, and people in Southern California might be familiar with, they're out of San Diego, and they created the Predator B drones, which, of course, they've flown military operations in Afghanistan and Iraq. And since 2004, Customs and Border Protection has had a contract with General Atomics for Predator B drones that do overflights along the U.S. southwest border and also the northern border. They're not weaponized, but they have all kinds of surveillance capabilities. There's another big company that's gotten some big border contracts. It's called Northrop Grumman. Northrop Grumman is people probably are familiar with that name too. And their most recent contract with CBP was with a biometric database contract called HEART, but it's called HEART, the Homeland Advanced Recognition Technology. And it has all sorts of capabilities to be able to store information about people, from digital fingerprints and iris recognition, facial recognition, to even being able to track GPS coordinates of places where people have been. So it's showing like this advance in this sort of tracking and monitoring technology. And so all these companies that have gotten contracts, there's a number of smaller ones as well. And there's newer ones that if we were to look at 2024, there's a big company called Anduril. I do believe they're in Southern California as well. And Anduril has these autonomous surveillance towers that you see in Southern California along the Southern California border. They're also in Texas. And these towers are really the artificial intelligence aspect, the AI part of it is becoming huge, and Anduril is leading the charge in that. So what we did with this report in 2020, or 2021, I guess the report came out, was identified some of these top border contractors who have the most contracts, and then looked at where their campaign financing went. And we looked at all across the board. We looked at Democrats and Republicans, all different types of candidates. And when I was looking at the presidential candidates, Biden and Trump at the time, I was expecting 50-50. So when it came out 3-1 in favor of Biden, it was quite surprising to see that. Because if you went back to 2016, which of course was Clinton versus Trump, it favored Trump. The industry, and they usually, like the industry itself, they don't have to vote for one person or other. They can vote for both people, so it's win-win for them. But it was surprising to see that it went 3-1 for Trump, for Biden. And so I was wondering, as this played out, you know, how that would affect the sort of contracts that were coming out of the Biden administration, and without, you know, knowing, just being able to connecting the dots, I guess, looking at the 3-1 in favor of Biden, and then seeing that with Biden, with a legacy of Biden, and that said, it'll be interesting to see if Trump continues raising the bar and giving out more contracts. But Biden ending his term as the top contractor ever, I can't help but look at that correlation between the two.
So actually, to that point, now looking at the 2024 election campaign between Harris and Trump, do you know who received more campaign contributions from border industry companies? And which companies, and we might not have time to get into this full list, but what if some highlights of some companies who gave the most in campaign contributions for the 2024 election?
Now, I should say that's just the study that I'm going to try to do this year sometime. It takes a bunch of digging and looking and first, like, identifying the top 15, 20 border companies of the last 4 years. And I imagine a lot of them are the same as we looked at in 2020. And then just going through each one and digging up the numbers of where they were spending their campaign contributions. I hate to say that that still hasn't been done yet. Mm. So I'm not sure. Look at it. That is here and there. I saw that like CoreCivic or Geo Group, both of those companies, they're both private. They're private companies that do private prisons. And they have a lot of contracts with Immigration and Customs Enforcement for private detention, immigration detention centers. And they went very heavily towards Trump, like almost 95%. And then there were some other companies and bigger military companies, I believe. Now I haven't done the whole like systemic look at this yet. But I saw that, I think it was Lockheed Martin, but please, actually, I shouldn't even be saying this. But they were going more heavily towards the Democrats. So I'm wondering, when seeing those sorts of, just in my couple different looks at where the money was going in terms of campaign contributions, I'm, just the four or five companies that I look at, I'm wondering if it's more 50-50 this time. Like 50% Harris, 50% Trump. I don't know yet, but that would be my guess, based on what I've seen up to this point.
And one of the things you also note in your piece, although we're not going to get into it, and I'll just actually have to jump to my last question, is the fact that there's also an Israeli company that has been receiving contracts as part of this border industrial complex in terms of, I believe it's things around surveillance with respect to the border. So I actually now just want to jump into my final question, which is, now, again, this has been going on for decades, bipartisan support for this border industrial complex that literally is terrorizing communities in the United States, innocent communities in the United States. Now the Trump, and although we saw with Biden, he had one of the highest amounts of money given to border industry companies. But now the Trump administration is asking from Congress $175 billion for the border and immigration enforcement. So what we're seeing with Trump is he's inherited a lot of the infrastructure, but is really trying to further expand and grow it exponentially. Do you think it's likely he will get this approved? And if so, what are the dangers of such an amount being allocated to further expand and strengthen this border industrial complex?
Well, the first thing, that is a massive amount. That would be a dramatic, dramatic increase, even with all the infrastructure and everything that we've mentioned up to this point. Like to give a sense of how much money that is, if you take the amount of money put into border and immigration enforcement since the creation of DHS or the implementation of it in 2003, there's been a little over $400 billion. So $175 billion, that's nearly half of that. And they've massively built up the border. Like the fortification of the border in the last 20 years since DHS has been massive and unprecedented. So if $175 billion were to be approved, and that's so much money that I imagine that it will be a very difficult process for that to pass. Like at the beginning of last year, my eyes were wide open when that $15 to $20 billion, there's a $15 billion border bill that was running through Congress that was really being promoted by the Democrats. A year ago, and I thought that one might pass, but it didn't, right? That was a really a lot of money too, because that goes on top of the budgets, and the budgets are already very high. So I don't. But the thing is, with Trump, if that were to pass, that's when I really think that Trump's kind of, a lot of times he's a lot of hot air and a lot of rhetoric. He presents a danger, of course, but he also is just, he continues on. Like his first term, he continued on using the same budgets, using the same infrastructure that he inherited.